and Tis the Law has the lead at the top of the stretch. It is Tis the Law in front with 3/16 to the finish. Tis the Law has a four-length lead. He's left the others behind.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track. The Leah Auto Group, Leah Cars for life. Find them on the web at leahcars.com. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Good morning and welcome to the Wednesday edition of Racing Across America. Brian Natto with you on a little overcast day here at Saratoga. Just a little bookkeeping. Unfortunately, we've canceled the opener, the Jonathan Kaiser Steeplechase race. I'm going to bring in Sean Clancy in a second here. Race 3 and race 10 are also off the turf today. If you're wondering about the weather and summer in Saratoga, we know it's, we don't know anything really about the weather. Summer in Saratoga, I mentioned when I was on the handicappers report with Mike Callahan, we started with an 80% chance of rain at around 4 o'clock, and then it was like 60, and then it was 40 when we just got off the air. So obviously just check the website, check the weather and all that. But I'll bring in Sean Clancy of the Saratoga Special, and it's kind of unfortunate that, I have you on here to talk steeplechase racing, and we lose the Kaiser today, but it's good to see you. Many moons ago, you and I were
a long time ago,
in a different lifetime ago, it seems, when I was back with the Special and ST Publishing and steeped in steeplechase racing for that matter. But it's good to see you up here for that matter.
Oh, exactly. Nice to be back.
Yeah, I mean, last summer it was just a different world we were living in, and did you make it up at all, or what?
No, I never made it. I ran a few horses. I kept thinking about coming. I'm like, every time I went to pack the car and come up, I just looked at him like, and I didn't win any races, so it's actually fun. You know, it's like if you're here, you know, you'd want to be. If you win, you'd like to be here. When you lose, you're glad you're not here. So, or at least last year.
Yeah, and there's a lot of Saratoga people. I mean, you're on the short list, though. I mean, the golf cart, you beat every trainer here on the back stretch in the morning with the golf cart that I can see from here, the paper late at night. I know the rigors of all that. I mean, you are on the short list of Mr. Saratoga, so that had to hurt a little bit.
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, I hadn't missed the Saratoga. I've been up here every summer since 89. I came up with my father as a kid early on, at full summer. I was here the whole summer, all the way from 89 till last year. And sitting at home trying to enjoy the races the best you could. But everybody was in the same boat.
Yeah.
I wasn't doing any worse than anybody else. It was just, that was tough. It was a tough year on everybody.
I mean, I had access to the races. I didn't go last year. We filmed up here, and, you know, thanks to Naira and all that for letting us film, but I didn't go to the track last year. It's just weird. I remember people sending me pictures of our friend PTF sending me a picture of the paddock bar with like not one person there. Yeah. I remember going to my parents at about 3 o'clock and like a Friday afternoon in East Avenue. There wasn't a car parked on a racing day at East Avenue.
Yeah,
and I took
right,
a picture
exactly,
of that.
Yeah.
And the vibe was just so different. So at least I know you guys are, we've got a picture of today's Special as well, if you're not familiar with it. I mean, Wednesday and Saturday, you said you're publishing, right? And you can, thanks guys. And here's the Godolphin gals winning the running 1-2 and the Diana. I mean, the Saratoga Special is as much a Saratoga as anything.
Yeah, look, I retired from riding jump races in 2000, wanted to try to have some role here, play some part, and we started the special in 2001. We were like, we're going to do a daily racing newspaper. Everybody thought we were crazy, and which I didn't actually disagree with them and still don't. But we wanted to be part of Saratoga. I mean, I'd kind of seen the races from a different side, from galloping horses and riding races, and just trying to bring that. I mean, that's the color of Saratoga, to be able to bring that to the readers over, this is our 21st year, which is hard to believe. It was a little bit of a whim, like, okay, let's try this, see if it works, and here we are 21 years later, so it's fun.
Can't ask for anything more. Eclipse award-winning writer Sean and Joe, for that matter. Yeah. But Seth, it's a good segue, too, because I wanted to intro the paper, but I really want to talk nuts and bolts of Steeplechase Racing up here, which we're going to get, in theory, every Wednesday.
Yeah, exactly.
Thursday.
You just look at the sky and see.
But Seth Mara, my colleague, went over and did a cool piece with you guys and the staff to see it how all come together. He's going to air that Friday about actually putting that paper together, which I can speak firsthand. You start early in the morning with nothing, and then... Yeah. Although I have a little bone to pick. I remember talking to Tom Law, who I've known for 100 years. And Tom's like, we usually get done around 10:15
now. It's early,
now,
right? And, it's early. Technology.
I don't know. I might still be working for the special if I could have been guaranteed a 10:15 get out of Dodge time.
You were in the midnight one, two.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that was for,
man,
a
lot.
That was
for,
glory days, buddy.
Yeah, glory days, right? And the roster, again, I don't want to hit on it too much because Seth's got a great piece coming up. So. But I had you on here to talk Steeplechase Racing, and like I said, theoretically every Wednesday and Thursday. First and foremost, I just want you to kind of give everyone, myself included, because I'm admittedly out of the loop. It's been a while since I worked for you guys, and we covered the sport on a weekly basis. Give everyone up here, I know we know Jack Fisher, Jonathan Shepherd not with us anymore, he retired, the master has earned his retirement, so he's not going to be up here anymore. Just give everyone who to look for up here, the trainers, the jockeys, who's the up-and-comers and stuff. As I mentioned, we know Jack Fisher, but who else should they look for on a week-in and week-out basis?
Yeah, I mean, look, Jack's the most dominant trainer. He's been champion trainer many years, goes in the Hall of Fame this year. So he's always live, brings good horses up here. Carrie Breon is probably the second biggest trainer we have now. She was Jonathan Shepherd's assistant trainer for many years. And you can see she entered a couple for today, a couple for tomorrow. She's done well, has a lot of imported horses from Ireland and has done well. Leslie Young is always live, Patty Young's wife. Patty Young, five-time champion, he still helps out. And they bring horse Radishian tomorrow, who's live. Beyond that, you'll see people come up. Todd White will bring in a couple, with former Tom Voss and John the Shepherd assistant. He'll bring up a couple. Richard Valentine will bring up a couple. Steeplechase has really suffered from COVID. I mean, we got hit hard with COVID because of our game is structured around the social event. So we lost a lot of our race meets last year. A lot of the owners didn't reinvest and buy new horses because they had horses on the sidelines last year. I mean, I started with, I think I had 8 or 10 horses last year and just barely got to run them. I mean, if you look like a horse like Jibber Farrell, we run tomorrow. I think he ran twice last year, total. Maybe three times, but it was very hard on hard on owners. So our field size is light. We didn't have many races. We canceled a lot of races last year, canceled a few race meets this year. So had a hard time graduating maidens into the allowance ranks. And like I said, owners didn't replenish the stock. So it's a little, we've been struggling with that.
If you haven't been, and obviously we run Steeplechase Races on the flat up here, but as a guy that was sent to many of these places, it is a fun time, Far Hills or the Gold Cup and places like that. There's great racing. It's a festive atmosphere too. So I get what you're saying. We were going to run the Jonathan Kaiser today, and Sean and I were talking off the air. Hopefully they'll bring it back. Just tell everybody first and foremost a little bit about Jonathan Kaiser, who I know you were close with and rode with, and unfortunately was taken way too soon.
Yeah, Jonathan Kaiser's a great kid. Died in 2000. He was 22 at the time. Just this great, likable kid. He was unbelievable jockey. He had won 90. I think he won 92 races at when he died. He died from, he fell off a rope swing, which is unbelievable. You go ride jump races and then, you know, to have your life taken in such a crazy manner. But he had won 92 races in four seasons. Put it in perspective, I won 152 in 13 years, and I retired. I was 10th leading jockey at the time races won. So he had won 92 in four seasons. So he was just a phenom, stylish, beautiful rider, rode like a flat rider, real low and tight on a horse, had great sense of the pace, but just a likable kid. I always said, you know, he wouldn't let you not like him. He was taking all our rides. He was a phenomenal rider. You're looking at this kid, there's envy, there's jealousy, there's everything, but everybody loved Kaiser. We always called him Kaiser and just loved him. And hard to believe he's gone. He's been gone 21 years now. It's hard to believe. Just
I want to show shocking. The video of the Mean Queen as well at Nashville, Percy Warner. I mean, we hope we're going to run this race back. She looks like a heck of a prospect, right? Like a real serious horse. For, as you mentioned, Jonathan's longtime assistant. Came from Ireland. You're going to pick her up here. She's going to be on the point here, actually. Yeah. And also talk about this race, but also talk about the website, because I was like, oh, I want to find these races. I want to show these races. And, you know, when I was working in Fair Hill, you didn't go to the NSA website and look at the high definition videos of these races. No. Hell of a job that they've done.
Yeah, it's improved a lot. You can actually go back and watch all the horses run. Mean Queen wins this race at Far Hills. She beat Filly and Mares here, but she's been a phenom since she's come over. She beat the boys in allowance race, came back and beat the girls here, undefeated over jumps. Just serious prospect, like you said. I'm very very strong. She was favorite for today in the Kaiser. She'll come back and be very tough against the boys again. It's a little bit of a diminished class. There's only seven horses. There's no real standouts in there other than her. I mean, she's very good, and will be very tough when she runs.
Now tomorrow we will run the Smithwick, which Sean is Riverdy Stable. If you're not in the loop, you mentioned you've got about 10 horses, some flat, but typically steeplechase. And you are, we're going to bring up video, if you want to see it or not, at Great Meadow, which is, I couldn't find it on the website, and then I remembered, oh, that's Gold Cup Day, right? So I had to, okay, that's what it is. When Galway Kid and Gibralfo tangled, and you've got a nice one here. He's front and center tomorrow. In the Smithwick, $150,000 grade one. The Riverdy is the double blues there with the stripes. And this was a heck of a finish. You're going to get a little weight edge as you were giving 6 pounds last time. Talk about not only this horse and the Smithwick tomorrow, but you know where you get some of these horses and stuff. Because I know that you buy a lot of them from here, but you also get some from across the pond too, right?
Yeah, for this horse specifically, I bought him, and he was running in England. I had watched him run for about 2 years over there. He's kind of a lightly made horse, a little bit smaller than a lot of the European horses. So I had watched him run over there. Just felt like he was going to be a perfect American-type horse. He likes firm ground or good ground, or handle soft ground. But I bought him in a coffee shop. A friend of mine, Matt Coleman, was on the phone. I was in a coffee shop in Middleburg, Virginia, and bought him over the phone, and for 28,000 pounds, and he's just been a real flag bearer for us. He's won, I think, over 250 and won a grade two. Has yet to win a grade one. If you look at his form, I think he's tried grade ones five times, hadn't won yet, but real overachiever, lovely, cool, hard-trying horse, and for us, it'd be nothing better than come here and win a grade one at Saratoga as an owner. I mean, I won one as a jockey, but I'd sure like to win one as an owner.
Second in the Turf Riders up here a couple years ago, and that's the signature race that the Smithwick builds to. Before I let you go, because I know a couple things that I still retain from back in the day, weight's a big deal up here, but also having a former flat horse running over these jumps is different than a a hilly course at Nashville or things like that, correct?
Yeah, no question. I mean, really, you want form. You want flat track form. A good flat horse will be tough up here. I mean, like Ron Anderson, he always says, I just look at the Ragusan numbers, and he looks at the Ragusan numbers, and I promise you, a lot of times they're right. I mean, when you look back at a horse's flat career, it definitely corresponds here when the flat track, especially we've taken out a lot of the hurdles, so jumping isn't quite as much of a paramount as it was. So you can look at flat form. Weight, if you look at like the turf riders, a lot of times the lightweight will be tough there. And look for, you know, you look for, it's very similar to handicapping flat race. You look at a horse that's coming to the race right, that hadn't had too many starts. You're just trying to, you know, you can look at kind of how they've gotten here. If they look fresh, if they look pointed for this, you know, that's kind of the horses you want to look for when you come to Saratoga.
Just quickly, 30 seconds before we go, we run the Rick Violet today. I know you knew him for a long time, was friends with him for a long time. I can remember seeing him when I worked for you at Fair Hill, popping in on occasion. Just give me a quick, there he is there, who we lost a couple years ago. Great trainer, but boy, he was so much more too.
Yeah, he is the guy that just gave back to the sport. I mean, I think every one of us probably got in an argument at least once with Rick Violet over something. But he was the guy doing the work. He was the guy going to the meetings, representing the horsemen, and the rest of us were, you know, raising kids or doing things. He was at those meetings and putting back into the game. He stand-up guy. He wouldn't let you back down. If you made a mistake, he'd tell you. I once said to him, it's my fault. It's my fault. And he said, I know it's your fault. Now, what are you going to do about it? And it was such, I was like, whoa, you know, you're looking for this, like, it's okay, buddy. He was never going to give you that. It's okay, buddy. He said, what are you going to do about it? And then we went out and did something about it.
And he did a lot of things up here. Exactly. Like I said, not just winning, you know, grade one races, but doing a lot for the backstretch, but a lot of things you didn't see or hear about. So it's cool that they're going to honor him today here with the Rick Violet for New York Breds. Sean Clancy of the Saratoga Special every Wednesday and Saturday at the track. Hopefully we're going to get either you, Joe, or Tom up here to talk steeplechase racing if they let us.
So
always good to see you. Good to see you back up here as well.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Sean Clancy with the special. When we come back, it's our first break here on Racing Across America. Mike Welsh with the DRF Daily Racing Forum will stop by, talk a little workout, we'll talk about the Rick Violet today, maybe look back on the weekend as well. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the West. I'm Scott Varley at Saratoga's latest and greatest high-rise luxury condo. Starting in the mid-fives, every condo here has two bedrooms and two baths and upgrades, just like this. Check out these oversized private balconies. We also have a gym, a private lounge, and get this, a heated parking garage. To make a reservation for your private condo at the West, call or text me. I'm Scott Varley at 518-281-6808.
For four generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play. With easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport, it's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement. From world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the Wednesday edition of Racing Across America. Brian Natto with you here on a sunny day right now in Saratoga. A couple races taken off the turf, 3 and 10. We also took the Steeplechase card. It's been canceled. The opener, the Jonathan Kaiser. Hopefully we'll run that back later in the meet. And I just had Sean Clancy of the Saratoga Special on to talk a little jump racing. But now I'll bring in my second guest, Mike Welsh of the Daily Racing Form joins me. And Mike is as steeped as anyone on the morning workouts up here. Mike, thanks for joining us. And it's probably pretty late in your day already up here, huh?
Yeah, you know, today was a weird day. I mean, it rained so much overnight. I really didn't think the track would be in any condition for workouts this morning. We've already lost 4 or 5 mornings for the same reason. And I got a call about 6 o'clock from one of the clocks, and it says, you know, the track's okay, and we're going to have some work. So I jumped into the car and ran over, and true enough, we had about 5 or 6 early, and then we had about 25 or 30 after the break. They harrowed the track. Track's in great shape. I mean, I'm amazed with all the rain we got here last night.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, summer in Saratoga, we're going to see a lot of rain up here, and you've got to check the conditions, not only the track, but the turf as well. Mike, before we're going to talk a little bit about the Rick Vila today in a bit, but talk about exactly what you're doing early in the morning. I know workouts have really kind of risen to the fore, I'd say, in the last 5 or 6 years, and you at the top of that list, and the great job you do with the form. And you can talk about where, A, they can get the workouts, and B, kind of what you and the team are doing here in the morning.
Well, you go to DRF.com, and under the handicapping, there's a drop down that goes takes you to the clock of reports, and you can buy them on a daily basis. I think you can get 5, 10, 20 cards. You can buy the whole meet. So there's a lot of options there. As far as what we do, I mean, we're out here in the morning. I'm on the main track side. Donald Harris is on the Oklahoma side on a regular basis. We kind of team up together for turf works. He comes over, and Dave Grenning helps out on the main track sometimes after the break. It gets really hectic on busy days. So we have 2 and 3 of us up there sometimes trying to make sure we don't miss anything. A lot of action then. But we've got everything pretty much covered. And, you know, it's just a matter of ferreting out the right ones, either the ones that work good or the ones that sometimes the good information is the horses that don't work well, that are, you know, short prices. So there's a lot to learn. You know, and I always say workouts is kind of like the last domain for handicappers. I mean, everybody has the buyer figures. Everybody has the trip notes. They watch races. They know biases, this and that. But not many people are out here in the morning. So there is still, I think, some information that most of the people don't have, and if you get the clock report, you have it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, very few people probably, you know, you can look at the racing form and say, oh, this horse worked a bullet, but, you know, Mike's there and actually saw it, and I think that's important because, yeah, any horse, if they want, can work a bullet, but it's how it's done, how they're training, how much they were asked, and that's not what you're going to see in the racing form. So I know you kind of grade them on a letter curve in the workout report.
Yeah, and I also always tell people you got to read the comments. I mean, sometimes the grades are a little subjective, but if you read the comments, sometimes you can read through the lines on those. We also try to put in workmates when we have them and sometimes you can learn a lot about, especially you get two-year-olds working against older horses, winners. That's pretty significant too. And you know, like we all like to say, it's not, of course, I didn't make this up, but they always say about workouts, it's not how fast you work, it's how you work fast.
Yeah.
And being able to describe how these horses work, I mean, we've given 5 aces and 59 B minuses and C pluses, and 5 aces and 102 flat B pluses and A minuses, just because of the way they finish. And gallop outs, to me, are really important. I like when horses gallop out strong, show a lot of energy, especially going into a race, and we kind of try to put those in when we can, too.
Yeah, and the other thing you mentioned that you hit on it, that, you know, typically a lot of horses will work together, and they'll work, you know, with good stakes horses will work together, and you're not going to see that, at least in the lines in the racing form. You buy the report, you're not only, you know, giving a grade, but you're saying, well, this horse worked with this horse, held his own, and I think that's very important.
Yeah, and look, horses, when they work together, one horse beats another horse, doesn't always mean if they work, they run together, they're going to beat them in the race, but you know, sometimes it is significant, and again, I think the most significant part is when you see younger horses, especially maidens, when they're paired up with older horses, not only is that an indication that the trainer thinks that they're pretty good, but if they can hold their own in the morning, that validates that, and that when they come up against maidens, it's a significant piece of information. Not all the time, it doesn't always work, but it does enough to make it worthwhile.
We don't want to give away all the keys to the safe here, but I know Essential Quality's coming back, Belmont winner, leading three-year-old right now, fourth in the Derby, his first defeat, the reigning two-year-old champion. He's been up here, he's been working towards the Jim Dandy. Again, talk a little bit about how you think he's coming in and how he's maybe progressed from this spring.
I've seen two works from him. The first one was obviously just a maintenance work, an easy half. He had a more significant work over the weekend. And for those that haven't read our reports or talk about it, Essential Quality, he's a good workhorse. Mm-hmm. He's not a great workhorse.
He never has been, right?
I was
in Louisville Derby week, and he doesn't wow you, right?
No. But, I mean, he's good. I mean, especially from pole to wire, he's always very good. On the mm-hmm. gallop-outs, sometimes he kind of pulls himself up a little bit, and I think that's just him by nature. I thought his work here the other day galloped out significantly well, and maybe the time doesn't bear it out. And one thing that we have noticed here is that the main track has been a little bit on the dull side in the morning and in the afternoon, too. You saw opening day, first race, 155 for a mile and an eighth, and a lot of slower times. It's been that way in the morning, too. We aren't seeing gallop out sometimes like we have in the past, but just visually, I thought he was impressive the way he galloped out. So he's coming into the race, I think, ready to fire his best shot, and he's obviously the horse to beat in there if he runs his best.
For sure. Mike, talk a little bit about the differences between Oklahoma, that's a training track, and the main track as well. I mean, you're going to typically see much slower times at Oklahoma. It's a deeper surface or what?
Not necessarily. Okay. They redid the surface over there, and I'm getting reports, or just looking at the times.
Right.
I think the track there is a little bit faster than it used to be. In fact, Donald, my partner today, said it was really fast this morning, and that could be a factor of the rain we got, too.
Sure.
I mean, a lot of times you need to get more water into these tracks. But the main track seems a little bit deeper. The times are definitely a little slower than they have been in the past. The gate works aren't quite as fast. It was very fast down the backside. When they work out of the gate here, the first 3/8 of a mile is a straight run down the backstretch. And when the backside is fast, the times are fast. Mm-hmm. But it hasn't been quite that over the last, or at least since I've been here, for nearly 3 weeks now. And again, the stretch is definitely deeper than it usually has been. So you won't see quite the same times, quite the same gallop out. So trying to distinguish some of these gallop outs that may not look on paper like they're also that good, but if you watch them, watch how they're done. And I thought Essential Quality, same with Drain the Clock yesterday and Mischievous Alex, too. I mean, visually, they were both pretty impressive to me.
Okay, good to know. Mike, in addition to being a workout guru, you and your partner, colleague Dave Grenning, obviously, writing for the Racing Form. I know you covered the Rick Violet today. We've got video of a couple of the Maker horses that are in here. Let's bring up Run Curtis Run first and foremost. Showed a little more speed than his stablemate Barice. I know you talked to Mike about both of these horses. He's on the outside with the pink and yellow of the Dub Silks. I thought he was professional in his debut.
Yeah, no, he ran well. I mean, Mike told me he was high on both these horses, and obviously neither of them disappointed. I mean, their numbers aren't anything to rave about,
right.
But they are two-year-old New York breds after all, so you're not going to see those huge numbers. And the track obviously had some moisture in it that day, so it's a little hard to say how much of a factor that was in his performance. He's been off for a couple of weeks. Run Curtis Run is coming back on shorter rest, comes off a bullet work. Mike thinks both of them are going to run well, and I don't see any reason why they wouldn't. It's just going to be a matter of how this race plays from a trip standpoint, I guess, and how the track is playing today. He's obviously going to be sent out of there being on the rail, and we'll have to see how the inside of the track is playing.
We'll take a look at Barice here, who is the other maker in here. And Mike, you've seen all these two-year-olds. And to me, anytime you see one settle a little bit, and still win, and he's ranging up here, but not just go to the front and be better than weaker horses. I always think it's significant, especially this early in the year.
Yeah,
I
know. Most two-year-old winners you see, wire to wire. So when you see one take some dirt and they're able to come off the pace and win, I think that is somewhat significant. And here he's running down the leader and, does so pretty professionally for a first-time starting two-year-old. Now, he's the one that's been off a couple of months.
Right.
I asked Mike if there's any significance to that. I mean, there are some gaps in his workouts, too. You see, it was 3 weeks till he worked back the first time, and then another 4 weeks till he worked back the second time. So I was a little concerned about that, Mike's, and now there just wasn't any races for him, so he backed off a little bit on him. But, you know, I got the trainer line. They're both doing well right. coming into the race, and we expect them to run well, so we'll see.
And to that point, though, it's tricky with these two-year-olds because you win first out. They're not going to write a 1X for a two-year-old in June. It's just not going to fill. So you've got to start looking for stakes races and where they are. And these are New York breds, as you mentioned. They're not, you know, blowing up the stopwatch. So it is what it is. And that's probably a good segue to Ready AP. I know you talk to Christophe Clément a lot. And I'm going to have Jason Blewett of West Point Thoroughbreds on shortly, and he's going to talk even more about her. But this is a filly taking on colts here, and the Stillwater didn't fill, so here she is. But
she's here, or this race probably wouldn't have
filled. Yeah, that's a good point, too.
You would have had four and probably wouldn't have used it.
They wouldn't have run it. And I think Christophe mentioned this to you, but, you know, on July 21st, typically the fillies are a little bigger, stronger, more mature anyway than the colts, correct?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people see a filly against colts and they automatically put an X through them. But like Christophe told me, he thinks the fillies have a little bit of an edge, two-year-old fillies at this time of year over the colts. And she's coming back quick. He's not, you know, like over the moon about having to do that, but he had few options. It was either bring her back here or wait to New York Showcase Day, which is another month or so down the road. She's doing well. The one concern he had, that she didn't break real sharp in her debut. So as you see, he put her back into the gate. He had Luis Saez actually come out and work her. She broke well. She toyed with her workmate. I thought the work went very well for her. He loves the post. I love the post, too, being outside today.
Sure.
So even if she did break a step slow, she should be in good position. So if I had to make a pick, put a gun to my head in here, it would be Ready AP. I'm not sure what price you're going to get. Will she be the favorite up against the Colts? I'm not sure. You look at the buyer numbers, Run Curtis Run has a 65. She has a 54. Maybe Run Curtis Run will be the favorite. But
yeah.
If I had to play the race, and I'm not, I would bet on Ready AP.
You mentioned that gate drill, and just going back to workouts, just talk a little bit about, obviously, you need to buy the report, and you're seeing these works, but the difference between a regular drill and a gate drill, what maybe a trainer is looking for, and just as a guy that's not in the loop as much as you are, when I see too many of them, especially with firsters, I don't think it's a great sign.
Too many gate works?
Too many gate works.
Well, it might be an indication that they weren't breaking well in earlier gate work, so they want to bring them back there again. I mean, they do have to get approved by the starter to run. So if they break out of the gate and don't break well, they're going to have to bring them back there.
Right.
Now, they don't necessarily have to have a published work to get approved from the gate. As long as they break out, and a lot of them go, Linda Rice, for is an example. You don't see many gate works on any of her horses, her young horses, prior to their first starts. But they do get approved at the gate. They have to be there.
Sure.
They have to break out. The starter has to approve them. They usually will go an eighth of a mile or so and then pull up. And I like horses working out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can learn a lot watching gate works. They usually go in company, not alone, so you get that added advantage too. So the one thing about gate works here, typically in the past, not as much, like I said, they were very fast. I mean, one thing about them, they get a running start out of the gate before they get to the pole, and they've got a lot of momentum going, and it is a straightaway for the first 3/8 down the backstretch, or almost 3/8. So that tends to quicken them a little bit. So, but again, on gate works, like pole works, the gallop outs are significant. They finish the work midway on the turn when they go a half mile, 5/8, they go all the way around the turn. So if they can sustain that momentum going around the turn, whether it's on the gallop out or in the work itself, and finish up well, that's what I like to see.
Yep. All right, quickly before we let you go, I want to take a look back at Saturday Sanford. Witt, 2-for-2 now for Todd Pletcher, and he's kind of doing it, in a different sort of way, coming from behind. He kind of blew the start here. He's the one horse, didn't break again like he did on debut. Ran a 90 buyer, and as Mike, as you know, in the middle of July, that is a significant number. He's a pretty darn impressive two-year-old at this time of the year.
Yeah,
right?
For a two-year-old, this is a big effort, especially since – you know, he is giving away some lanes at the start.
Yeah.
He's taken dirt. He's overcome that in both his races. Obviously, a lot of talent. He broke a little bit better this time than he had the first time, but still gave away ground. But he was able to rate through the middle of the race, and then he makes this really big move here. He's got such a nice turn of foot. When Irad asked him to run here, he just ran by these guys like they were going the other way. And you will notice, though, even though he's way in front at mid-stretch, Irad keeps after him pretty significantly. I was a little surprised. Right here, a couple of right-hand sticks. I think he's going to go to the left hand maybe, or maybe it's just all right-hand. But it was all right-hand. Four or five times. Nope, there's six and seven. But I talked to Todd about it, and Todd said, Irad was just a little worried since he had to make a big run in the middle of the race. He didn't want him to lose his focus, or he was worried that that could have taken a little bit out of him, and he might start easing up, so he wanted to make sure he kept after him to keep him going to the wire. Normally in those circumstances, the riders would start taking a hold, especially with young horses, but he thought the effort that he had put in up to that point because of the slow start, he needed to keep after him. So we'll wait and see now. I mean, it looks like if everything goes well, he'll skip the next two-year-old race and come back in the hopeful. And at this point, he's probably the favorite. But we've seen some other pretty good two-year-olds here already, and you know we're going to see some more as we go along. So he's going to be one of the ones to beat for sure, but always look forward to the hopeful. By then, you've got a handful of horses that have been really impressive during the course of the meet.
Yeah, and by then, too, the precociousness of I'm just better than you at 5.5 furlongs and I'll wire the field's kind of worn off a little bit.
Right, they stretched to 7/8. Then obviously this horse, the way he runs, Todd has no problems with him getting at least another eighth of a mile up to 7/8. So separate the men from the boys when we get to the hopeful at that point, and then it's on to the champagne, and then two turns as they head toward the Breeders' Cup.
Never too early to look forward. Mike Welsh of the DRF, get those workout reports, check them out. I think, as Mike mentioned, they're one of the last few kind of stones unturned that you can't just find by looking at the racing form. So check it out on DRF.com. Mike, always a pleasure. Thanks for taking a few minutes to stop by.
My pleasure to be here.
All right. When we come back, second break here on Racing Across America. When we come back, Jason Blewett of West Point Thoroughbreds. Stay tuned.
Juvenile fillies turf, 14 of them across the track. Heels set on their way. And the dance on the outside, broke a little sideways with Pro KK, but meanwhile it's going to be Steinman running on now, and Somali Lemonade's got eight to make up. They come to the top of the lane, stop shoving. Maria's got a lot left. Stop shoving. Maria goes on. Sweet Cat is right there, hard not to like. Royal Body is running on. Past the eight ball, they come, stop shoving Maria for the run, still under a hand ride as they come to the 16th. Stephanie's Kitten coming out late. Yes, Stephanie's Kitten coming fast. Stephanie's Kitten, stop shoving Maria. Stephanie's Kitten's watered.
Monster Chances broke smartly, but so did Terra from the Cape. On the inside, Sky Lantern the Grey going well. If he can get through, can get through. Sky Lantern the Grey looking for somewhere to run. Wide, wide open. It's Terra from the Cape hanging on. Terra from the Cape tries to go all the way. On the outside now, here comes Flotilla in the light blue. Flotilla is absolutely flying. Watch the Chances in there too. But Flotilla has gone right on by. And Flotilla is coming home to score. Flotilla has won it just about two in the end. It'll be Watch the Chances, Summer of Fun, coming on to finish there.
Welcome back to the Wednesday edition of Racing Across America. Brian Atto with you, and a special thanks to Sean Clancy of the Saratoga Special and Mike Welsh of the DRF. And you know, check out those workout reports, as I mentioned, because those are really the last kind of thing where you can't just look at the racing form and figure it out yourself. And Mike and Dave Grenning and their colleagues are here watching them and reporting on them and taking notes on them each and every day. And I think that's significant because there's so much more that you can unearth when you get the reports as opposed to just looking in the form. So check that out on DRF.com as well. And I'm thrilled to bring in my third guest and someone that I have literally known since the first day I've ever been in racing, and about a million years ago. Jason Blewett of now West Point Thoroughbreds joins me way back in 2006 up in the little cubby.
Yep.
Of the Naira press box. A little different era now.
And you were, I mean, how, ladies and gentlemen, the roles are reversed. You were, quote unquote, my intern.
Absolutely.
That summer. And, you know, I liked Brian immediately, and I could tell I was in good company just as far as liking a wager and being a student of the game. But I think it might have been late Sunday, wrapping up the first full weekend of racing up here, and I go into our little back office there, the Naira office, and I'm like, what are you doing? And you had one of those racing manuals out, and you were writing down in a notepad buyer pars. So I said, this guy's okay.
That was a fun summer. That was a different age ago, too, when we were back in the cubby, you and Eric as well, and then certainly you graduated to bigger and better, and I guess this is the first year that you are on the racetrack, not working for Naira, not working for Gulfstream Park, behind a camera in how many years?
Yeah, it's and I was very fortunate both to work for Naira and then the Stronach Group most recently, and really enjoyed doing broadcasting and television and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, started doing the TV, even the old school sports channel, and then Fox Sports recap show once Johnny I retired, John and Brial retired. So that was 05. So did Talking Horses. And so, yeah, it's been about 15 years since I was up here not doing any TV
doing
at all.
TV.
So it does feels a little strange, but it's really, there's no place, as everybody out there knows, there's no place like Saratoga. It's great being back.
And quickly, before we get to 2021 and what you're doing with West Point and all, that first summer, that was 2006 when I was up there. Another very pretty daily presence in the back room was Harvey Pack. And we lost Harvey a few weeks ago. You knew him a heck of a lot better than I did, but he was in the wooden chair there on the door every day. And I always said, you know, who the heck was I? I was an $8 an hour paid intern that nobody knew who the heck I was. And Harvey always took an interest in me. You knew him way better. Just before we get going, talk a little bit about the passing, but not only Harvey's passing, but what he meant to racing, what he meant to your job, now my job, and taking everything to the next level.
Yeah, no, he definitely was a trailblazer for sure. And it opened up the door for guys like me, and even prior to me, like I think of my relationship with John and Brial, who I've always considered almost like one of a couple of like stepdads I have, along with Harry Rice Sr. here at Naira working at the races. But no, Harvey was one of a kind without a doubt. And just as far as his legendary status, I look back by thinking, and I tweeted it out, I wish we had smartphones like in 06, because just, you got to imagine Eric Donovan, Brian, myself, maybe Skip Dickstein was pulling up a chair in our little back office. It was us and Harvey. So the stories and him looking at the sheets all day and betting.
Awesome.
And it was great. And as much as I enjoyed watching Harvey when I first started to cut my teeth as a fan in the early 90s on the Nightly Sports Channel show, and again, he opened up the door to guys like Brian and myself, I really look back, what I'm most fond and appreciative about is having had that time in the press box in that back room with him for maybe 3 or 4 summers.
Mm-hmm.
Because
he was done with the form at that point, the show, so he was just hanging out, basically.
Right. The Ciro seminar, the old Ciro seminars that him and Andy hosted.
Yep.
Or Harvey hosted, and Andy was on, and they, I guess, had a, you know, an ever-revolving third co-host. That would end, and Harvey, you know, Harvey wasn't going to pay for a box downstairs. He could get the racing form box on Monday, so that was the one day he didn't join us in the press box. But other than that, we had him 5 days a week, so I'll always look back, and I'll never forget that, getting to know him. And just the jokes, and he called me a dodo head one time. He gave me a horse that had a big sheet number that I didn't like that came in. Horse by the name of Dad's Gun. I'll never forget it, trained by Bobby Barbera.
That was a different time. I can remember Gino Stevens firing like $60 four-horse X-Acta boxes
yeah.
up there.
Yeah, and Supers and Tri-Boxes.
Man, I mean, I don't go up there anymore myself, but it was just a different day and age of some real characters. So let's fast forward to 2021. I mean, you know, you did TV with Naira for so long, and 4 years, I believe, at Gulfstream Park, and I know you loved doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But now, new role for West Point Thoroughbreds. Again, you love doing the TV job. You're sitting here today, and I can just tell you love what you're doing.
Right.
Talk about that. Talk about what you're doing exactly for West Point.
Yeah, no, selling, and I appreciate it. I'm glad I've got that Saratoga, I guess, radiance going, Brian, and it's evident. But no, selling horses for West Point Thoroughbred. So you're doing basically client relations.
Okay.
All right, and I got a text out of the blue. I mean, first and foremost, I've known Terry Finley for over 20 years.
Terry and Tommy, I've known them since day one as well, are two of the best guys in racing, funnest, good, cool guys in racing.
Definitely. And Tommy, I probably met Terry a little before Tommy, but again, let's just say 20 years for both of them. Forgetting about anything else, A-plus guys to start with. So I got a text. It was a Monday or a Tuesday, right around Breeders' Cup time last fall, from Terry. And I said to my wife at the time, I said, oh, Terry Finley. And I figured he was probably wanting to set up maybe a night to get dinner after the races at Gulfstream once the winter meet started down south. And he said, can you call me? So he pitched me the job. And I did enjoy my broadcasting career. I was very fortunate to work for two big companies and was treated really. I mean, the 4 years I spent working for the Stronach Group and at Gulfstream Park, I mean, they really treated me well. And that was the question. Do I give up a job that I enjoy, that I think I'm pretty decent at, and people, for the most part, people respect me, to go into this great unknown of trying to sell racehorses to West Point partners? What if I'm terrible at it? What if I don't like it? But, I mean, 6 months on to the job, even forgetting about the fact that I'm back in Saratoga, which is a really nice, obviously, perk, and then some of the gig to come up here for the meet. But the job itself and the partners and just the entire West Point experience for me so far has been, I don't know what expectations I may have had. I didn't want it to go badly, and I didn't want to be bad at it, but it whatever expectations I had, it succeeded.
Yeah, and I mean, I know the playbook pretty good. Working out of your home in Lauderdale-by-the-Sea, Florida, is not the worst worst gig you can have either. You get up a little earlier than me, though.
I've noticed. And I probably go to sleep a little earlier than you. But no, I mean, the schedule, and look, someone's got to do it. It's a tough gig, but someone's got to do it. So my wife, Christina, who coincidentally is from Saratoga Springs, 10 months down in Fort Lauderdale, then you spend the summer up
here. So you're here for the summer. We'll get, because you've got a big horse today, obviously, in Ready AP. It is the Rick Violet. I want you just to hit on Rick as well. Sean Clancy was up here, and Sean knew him for years and years and years. And I think a lot of people knew or know of Rick as the trainer of several, you know, grade one kind of horses. But I'm sure you knew him for a long time, and he did so much more than just train racehorses.
Well, I mean, clearly, and I'm sure it's been talked about not only today, but in the run-up to having his own stakes race, which we'll get to in a second, just as far as the field is concerned. But no, a class act. And with Rick, you really got the whole package with him. You got a leader, highly intelligent man, top horseman, loved the game.
Yeah, a fighter.
And a fighter, and wanted to, and did. I mean, his life's work was not just taking, it was giving back to the industry that had been so good to him.
Yeah, it's great to see him honored today with a stakes race and kind of a day to to appreciate him. I didn't mention this on the handicappers report. It's also Zevo is going to lead the post parade today, which is pretty cool.
One of my old favorites.
Yeah, Warhorse for Chad.
Who is he by? Do you remember who Zevo was by? By a son of French deputy who I don't think threw another horse that could put one foot in front of the other.
Was it the Ramsey and Maker horse? I don't. That's the only one that.
True Direction.
Oh, okay.
Remember him?
Yeah, barely. Barely. So I think Zevo earned like 1.4 for Chad and Tom Coleman, I believe. So
yep.
That's pretty cool. West Point's going to do a little something out of the norm today. Ready AP, the lone filly in a five-horse field, is going to run. The Stillwater, I believe, couldn't fill. So let's show the entire replay, Bri, of her debut. Because I know she was odds on, Jason, and you guys paid a good number for her. And she, I guess, quote unquote, she was supposed to win, but maybe it didn't go as exactly according to plan. But in hindsight, it was probably a great thing.
Well, they opened the door.
She's
3-5. Yeah, she's the deuce in the black and gold of West Point. And it's like, you know, they're off except one. She gets left, that old Rodney Dangerfield line. But, I mean, you can watch this advance. And I remember watching the race from my home office in Fort Lauderdale going, all right, now it went from disaster to, all right, she's doing this. She's doing this in hand. And
right.
It seems like Jose Ortiz really hasn't asked her to run all that much, or Louis Saez, rather. Louis hasn't really asked her to kick on. She's done this under her own power. So, and was feeling pretty good at this point as she gets to the leader there and is still basically just wrapped up.
Yeah, and she the outside attack post today is advantageous as well. I saw some quotes from Christophe Clement, her trainer, to Mike Welsh, and he hit on the fact that, you know, on July 21st, it's not necessarily a bad thing that you're running a filly. They're a little more mature,
mm-hmm.
maybe a little more grown up. It's a much tougher field and task. You were a handicapper. Talk about her in the body of this race against four colts.
No, I mean, she's well drawn, and Christophe, ultimately, I'm going to give credit where credit is due. He's the quarterback. You know, from Terry Finley on down, there is a chain of command, and it is an open dialogue mm-hmm. in terms of, do you run here, not even pertaining to this filly, but there's always a conversation going on, what's the best course of action? And ultimately, Christophe gave her the green light, felt and feels as though that first race took nothing out of her. She's bounced out of it in good shape, and I'm just happy she drew outside.
Well, it's a big deal.
I love that post for her. And it's a special thing, not only getting to compete with a very promising New York bred More Than Ready filly for West Point Thoroughbreds, but a race named after Rick Violet. And going back, I mean, Rick, long before I joined the company, but
Dream
Rick
Rush, right?
Yeah, had Dream Rush. And, you know, Lear's Princess and Dream Rush are probably in a close to, you know, dead heat race as far as the two best fillies that West Point has ever campaigned. And Rick trained one of them to a couple of grade ones. So it's a real honor, and just have partners coming in from all over the country to see their filly run today, and couldn't be more amped up for the fourth race.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I didn't have this written down. I mean, West Point Thoroughbreds is a partnership. I would say at the top of the list of racing partnerships. Just talk about how people can get involved, because obviously it's out there for the taking if you want to be part of the team.
Yeah, definitely. It's the West Point Thoroughbreds website. You can just Google West Point Thoroughbreds. I got to tell you, as someone who, with their old job, I needed formulator, email, an iPhone that texted a little bit. That was really the extent of my technology. Terry Finley, though, and Debbie Finley, his wife, who's the real brains behind the operation, or I should say like the nucleus. She's the nerve center. Terry's always been a technology geek. So again, go to the website. If you would like more information, submit it there, or stop by, talk to me at the races. Mm-hmm. I'll be happy to share it, but we'll be active. We've got two horses currently on the website that do have some limited availability. Two horses going to Christophe Clement, and we'll be restocking in the yearling sales up here next month.
And West Point is and has always been a partnership that's going to take you places. They're going to take you to the Derby, own the Derby winner and always dreaming. They're going to take you to the Breeders' Cup. They're going to take you to significant races. We're hoping, you're hoping, that First Captain is going to continue that progression. Let's show the Dwyer. Makes it 3-for-3, where he stepped up integrated stakes company, has to answer the two-term question, hasn't done it yet, but he's the two, not the West Point Silks here. He's the two with the red cap. I do remember seeing a tweet from you. I think it was afterwards or in the days afterwards. You really feel, though, that he will answer that question. When can we see him up here? Jim Dandy slash Travers of the perfect world?
No, the Curlin. He's actually, although he won this as a grade three, and he's obviously a graded stakes winner, and you'll see him essentially track inside, and Jose Ortiz will angle out four wide or so, and he'll eventually catch up and cut down the four-horse riding with Biden. The Curlin is open for three-year-olds that have not won a graded stakes beyond a mile.
Okay.
So this,
so you get all the best of it.
Yeah, you really do. So this was a mile race here. So conventional wisdom says, okay, you're running for a little less money than you would a day later in the Jim Dandy, but you're not going to be running against a very good, very good horse, a classic winner from the Belmont and a two-year-old champion and essential quality. I would like to think Shug knew, even talking to Shug McGahee the week of the Belmont Stakes when I was in New York with West Point. I think Shug saw the writing on the wall and the fact that the Dwyer was going to come up a short field and was going to be, with all due respect, just wasn't going to be that tough of a spot. So I think a combination of Shug not having the gas tank close to being full, now you're adding more time from the Dwyer to the Curlin. He's training like a monster here. He loves it in Saratoga, loves the Oklahoma track, and you know, now you're slotting in the other puzzle pieces are the 9 furlong distance and the 2-turn trip, which clearly he's bred to do.
And I think you could see it on the video there. He didn't look great early, but he looked much better late, comfortable late, and a horse that looks like he's supposed to, you know, grow into a 2-turn horse.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's by Curlin, which is kind of a neat little just side nugget there, like stuff like that. Son of Curlin was going to be, I would have to imagine, a pretty big favorite in the Curlin Stakes the day before the Jim Dandy. And then you've got the AP Indy Dam, a great group of partners, including Bobby Flay, who bred first captain and sold him for a lot of money, but said, you know, maybe I should stay in.
Let me
stay in for a piece. So it's neat having him in the West Point family. And we're rolling along, man. We really are.
Well, before I let you go, because this is Saratoga and everybody wants the next two-year-old or stuff, give me a few names that we can look for here at the meet if they have or haven't run yet and see them in the entry and say, hey, maybe this horse is live.
Now, we've got a Ghost Zapper filly. Had a nice winner, by the way, and, you know, don't punch me or anything. Nice 11-20 winner yesterday at Colonial. A day late. I wanted to get on. I said, dude, let's do the show.
Yeah.
Let's do it on a dark day. Let's do it Tuesday. But no, we had a Nyquist filly win yesterday at Colonial first out for Dallas Stewart, who looked pretty good. And I think she's going to be coming up here, maybe a stakes filly later in the meet. A race like the Spinaway would certainly have to be on the radar. We've got a Ghost Zapper filly named Gowan Rush. She's entered tomorrow as a main track only, trained by Christophe Comont. We hope the weather stays.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not rooting for any races to get rained off as much as I'd love to see one of my fillies in. Assuming she scratches tomorrow, her debut is going to be Sunday and she's okay. The day before, Dallas Stewart, and I just stopped over to see both Dallas, who is, I mean, one of the all-time greats.
Dallas, great.
Yeah, it stopped over. We got a Medaglia d'Oro Empire Maker, two-year-old colt named Faith Runner, who should run okay, along with Dallas's Brigadier General, who ran a good second first out at Churchill a few weeks ago, losing to another nice runner for Gun Runner named Gunite, who
and
looks
the Gun
okay.
Runners are all right. And Jackson Traveler is a very nice, useful horse.
Yeah, Jax is turf dirt, just shows up. I don't think he's been worse than third in 8 career starts. Real stakes caliber, a hard-trying horse. He's the kind of horse with his ability and his talent level and his speed. He's the kind of horse you wish all your horses could be like
him,
because he's as honest as the day is long. May not win every time, but you know he's going to leave everything out there.
Yep. Great to see you. Great to see you back in Saratoga, and I can see you're loving the gig. So Jason Blewett, you probably knew him. Well, you did know him at Naira for many years, and then Gulfstream and Astronic Group, but West Point Thoroughbreds now. and really hitting it off up here in Saratoga. Good luck to Ready AP today and down the line as well.
Yeah, thanks. Right. And it's great being back, everybody. The fans here, racing fans across the country, there's none better, but it's just, it's a different ball.
It's a different level, isn't it?
It really is coming back up here. And I just want to thank everybody out there who, from my NYRA days down to Gulfstream, I've always, within Saratoga, I've always had a lot of support and people pulling for me. So much appreciated on that front. And it's great being back. And if you want to buy a racehorse and get involved with West Point, give me a ring.
Keep on keeping on. Jason Blewett of West Point Thoroughbreds, appreciate it. And we'll take one more break here on the Wednesday edition of Racing Across America. When we come back, we'll wrap it up. Stay tuned.
For four generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pennell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pennell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
To find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing, Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them, Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the clubhouse racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Welcome back to the Wednesday edition of Racing Across America. Brian Natta with you. We kick off week two at Saratoga. That seems impossible, what we do. The first Wednesday of the meet as well. A couple races off the turf, 3 and 10. We've canceled the opener, the Jonathan Kaiser Steeplechase. So the card starts in race two at 1:38 p.m. Rains are in the area. Knock on wood, we're going to be okay. They've left some really good races on the turf. The featured Rick Violette, we talked front and center with Jason Blewett of West Point Thoroughbreds. Great to see Jason. One of my favorite people, a guy I learned so much from in interning with NYRA way back in the day. And now he's on the other side of the camera after he did, 15, 17 years in front of the camera for NYRA and Gulfstream. And now he's, selling and working for West Point Thoroughbreds. And you can tell just by that segment there, he's loving life. So great to see JB back up here and doing his thing. Sean Clancy kicked it off with the Saratoga Special. Great to see Sean, too, and back up here because the special guys were not here. If you're not familiar with the paper, free paper Wednesdays and Saturdays, and the Saratoga Special, and Sean Clancy, for that matter, is Saratoga. And they have been as steeped in Saratoga for, I believe Sean said, the last 21 years as everyone. He's on the back stretch. Probably when I'm usually going to bed way early in the morning, the golf carts here. Him and Tommy Bellhouse at West Point usually rival each other with the golf carts, so thank you. And then Mike Welsh of the Daily Racing Form stopping by. Mike is a workout guru, and you can get them on DRF.com. Mike, Dave Grenning, and a couple of their colleagues just covering all the works, grading them out, notes on those works. So appreciate him stopping by. It's always a busy morning in Saratoga, so we always appreciate any time people can make the time to swing by on a live TV show on the backstretch. So that's it. That's it for Racing Across America here on Wednesday. Stay tuned. Mike Callahan, don't forget, Mike Callahan is here all day behind this desk with the bankroll. So good luck to Mikey. Hopefully he hits it out of the park. It's been a thing he's been doing pretty much of late. So that's exciting. Check out all the great promos here at Capital as well, that Pick 5 promo that we hit on. And check out, make sure you the scratches and the changes today. I'll update them on Twitter, the website with the one sheet. Best of luck on Wednesday in Saratoga. I'll see you back here tomorrow morning with Anthony Mormino for the Handicappers Report at 9 a.m. Good luck, everyone.
You've been watching Racing Across America. Racing Across America has been brought to you by... Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track. The Leah Auto Group, Leah Cars for life. Find them on the web at leahcars.com. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.